move to the next item in the next paper, which is, Henry, agenda decisions.
Thank you, Alan. Yes, so this is paper 1C. And we prepared this paper for you because we really, agenda decisions are, we see as an increasingly, if you like, important tool in supporting consistent application of our standards. So we thought it was very useful just to actually brief you about them. We also thought it was sort of timely to do it now because they've very much been attracting a little bit more attention recently. And I think that's actually somewhat inevitable because actually the committee under Sue's leadership has very much been working to improve the effectiveness of agenda decisions. And so I think some of these agenda decisions are having increasing impact and therefore that perhaps we get more feedback on them than we previously used to. So to quickly recap some of the background from the paper, formally the agenda decision is the document that the Interpretations Committee issues to explain its conclusion that it's not undertaking standard setting in response to a question that it's received from a stakeholder in a submission to the committee. But the important point is that in explaining that conclusion, particularly when it's explaining that standard setting is not necessary to answer the question, the agenda decision provides a lot of very helpful information to stakeholders about how to apply our standards to the particular fact pattern in the question and the submission. Now, as the committee is not doing standard setting, agenda decisions don't have the same mandatory status of the standards. And very importantly, all the committee can do in an agenda decision in that explanatory information is effectively explain how to apply the existing requirements. It can't change or add to those requirements. But given the process that agenda decisions go through, effectively, they are generally recognised by practice as being very persuasive pieces of information about how to apply IFRS. And the other thing about agenda decisions is that they do provide a very timely way of responding to questions and helping stakeholders. Because even though the committee publishes the agenda decision in draft as a tentative agenda decision, and there's a 60-day comment period when people can comment on them, when you compare the timelines for an agenda decision, it's much, much shorter than it is for any standard-setting activity that we can do. So they can be a very quick way of effectively improving the application of our standards. Now, the committee's been working on its responsiveness and providing more helpful information to preparers. But of course, that throws up the question that it recognises it has to be very careful about how far it goes in responding to questions in submissions, particularly when they have very specific fact patterns. And so this is the balancing act, if you like, that the committee has been navigating and giving quite a lot of thought to in response to some recent questions that it's been addressing on the new revenue recognition standard. And those discussions that the committee had, we also actually discussed them with the board as well, who were very comfortable with the approach that the committee is taking. Now, as we explain in, if you go to paragraph 13, the overall objective that the committee has in thinking about how to respond to questions is that it sees this explanatory information that it puts in agenda decisions, it sees the objective of that is really to help stakeholders get a common understanding of what they're required to do when they're applying our standards. And so achieving that is going to require different approaches depending on the particular facts and circumstances. And so what I thought I would try to do is really just highlight that with two examples of recent agenda decisions that were finalised in March on the new revenue standard, which show slightly different approaches. So the first example, which starts on page 6 in the appendix, this illustrates the approach, the committee's more usual approach, if you like, in responding to questions. Now, the particular question is about the sale of land and buildings, And the question is asking about a new requirement in IFRS 15. It's about what's called the identification of performance obligations. Very simply, the question is saying, do you treat the land and building separately as two performance obligations or as one? So do you componentize the contract, if you like? And if you look at this agenda decision on page 6, you'll see the first part of the agenda decision, what it does is it effectively just points to and links the relevant parts of the standard. So it's just pulling out directly from the revenue standard the very relevant bits from the standard and the basis for conclusion. And so just providing more direct context, if you like, to answer the question. And then when you look on page 7, from the second paragraph on, you can see that the material gets more specific to the particular question. And so it sets out the factors that a company with this type of situation would consider and actually the questions it would ask itself in applying the requirements and identifying performance obligations. But if you look, the agenda decision doesn't actually reach a final conclusion to say whether or not there's one or two performance obligations. It helps people along that journey, and the committee concluded that effectively this really will be very helpful, even without that conclusion, to improve the understanding of some new requirements and ensure that people have a better understanding about how they should go about applying the new requirements in IFRS 15. So as I said, that's the usual approach in an agenda decision. We don't actually conclude on specific fact patterns, but we provide the necessary sort of context and give people the information so they can apply our standards. The second example on page 9 just illustrates an approach where the committee goes a little bit further. In this case, the committee went further because they were aware that this particular question was actually disrupting people's implementation plans with IFRS 15 in the run-up to the standard becoming effective. So actually the committee concluded that it was actually necessary to go a little bit further than that first example to ensure that people had that common understanding of the requirements. And so this question is really about evaluating whether a particular contract, it's a sale of an individual apartment in an apartment block, whether or not that contract meets some pretty fundamental criteria in IFRS 15 about the pattern of revenue recognition. And so in this case, the committee actually does conclude on the application of those three criteria. But although the committee did that in this example, they were still very careful not to conclude on matters which really require a very broad consideration of facts and circumstances that can't be captured in an agenda decision. And that was the case in this particular example, because at the heart of one of the criterion is the need to assess the legal enforceability of the contract. And so if you look on the bottom of page 10, the very last paragraph of page 10, the committee highlights that judgment that's required about assessing the legal enforceability. But in the case facts that we set out on page 11 and on page 12, and I think it's at the top of page 12, the way we dealt with this is the committee actually just says it is assumed that in this case this contract is not legally enforceable. So the agenda decision doesn't draw a conclusion from the facts. It just makes that assumption in making the overall assessment about these three criterion. So that just avoids the risk of the agenda decision being misapplied or read too broadly. And it emphasises, of course, that judgment has to be applied in these situations. So hopefully that just gives you a little bit more colour around the agenda decisions. And just highlights effectively that the committee has to take a flexible approach to the particular question. We didn't have any particular question for you about this, but obviously we'd welcome any questions from you or any feedback.
Larry?
Henry, so do these write-ups, for example, in the normal course, then, are they reviewed by the board?
the effectively the agenda decision is exposed, the committee considers the feedback, finalises the agenda decision, and then those agenda decisions are reported to the board in a subsequent board meeting. The board effectively get chance to they get a report about the activities of the Interpretations Committee. Crucially, the board obviously get to hear a report about the tentative agenda decision as well. So if they have any particular views, those can be fed back to the committee. And of course, we have Sue is the chair of the committee, and we also have three other board members observing proceedings of the committee as well.
Alison?
How easy is it for interested people to access historical agenda decisions?
That seems a pertinent question after what we were talking about earlier on. So the way the agenda decisions get disseminated is, first of all, the IFRIC has a report at the end of its meeting which captures its tentative agenda decisions and that it's seeking feedback on, as well as reports its final agenda decisions. But they're available in a variety of ways. So on our website in the supporting implementation pages, you can both see all agenda decisions by time, chronology, and you can also find them by context. So you can go into any particular standard and find any agenda decision that's been historically issued by the committee on that standard. And then also, and I just highlight this one as well, in one of our versions of the standards that we publish, we actually also include the agenda decisions, the sort of footnotes, in context. And that's a very popular, it's called the annotated standards. And that's a tool that a lot of practitioners really use, because they've got the standards and they've got the agenda decisions in context in the standards as well.
And I think the other good thing that's happened... The other good thing that's happened since we've got the new website, which has got the supporting implementation page, is now when you open our website, everything that's open for comment sort of jumps out at you, and the draft agenda decisions now pop up, and they're very obvious, much more obvious than they used to be, which I think is one of the reasons why we're getting many more comment letters now on the agenda decisions. I think it's a combination of we're saying more, so people care more, but also they're more aware that they're there, which I think is good, because we're getting more input.
I think keep this paper handy, because it is going to be one of the things we are talking about and referring to in the conceptual the due process handbook review, because one of the things that we will have to address in the review is sort of how the due process handbook should treat agenda decisions in, I think, a much more robust way than it currently does.